A lot of my members still are on vacation. The meeting starts at 9:30 after we had St. Francis for 9 o'clock. And I need two more members for the quorum because we would like to also bring us to the active chair while for purpose of the meeting. Thank you. So if you just give us 2 more minutes, there's still some hot tea and sandwich while we wait. We are able to start now. Officially, I have to do the necessary in the form of an acting chairperson. So at this point, I will call for nominations from the floor as acting chairperson.
Thank you, sir. I will take the opportunity and propose Honorable Gina.
Thank you. There's a motion for Ms. Gina. Any further? In the absence of any further, can I have a seconder for Ms. Gina?
Thank you, Chairperson. I support the name of Honorable Gina to be the chairperson.
Thank you, Ms. Mashishi. On that note, I would like to ask Ms. Gina if she would come and take the chair, and we could proceed with the meeting.
No, I was going to ask, what's the source of that noise?
No.
Irritating.
I think it's louder than when I turn my phone, it goes off.
Remember the mic's on,
Good morning, honorable members and members from the department and the media. Members, I think we need to begin our meeting, but before we even start, I know everybody knows that we no more have a chairperson of this committee, and I think it will be proper for us to congratulate Ms. Chauhan for being chosen as Deputy Minister for Home Affairs. Yes, as a committee, I think we are proud of that we have produced the Deputy Minister, though we are going to be faced with a little bit of challenges as to how to go forward, but hopefully the new person who is coming to chair this committee will give him or her the necessary support that we are supposed to give to. And again, let me apologize, Secretary, for the quip of the committee, Ms. Bai. She couldn't make it for today. There are other commitments that you have engaged in. So that's one of the things that you need to notice. I don't know that, Secretary, there are any apologies before you continue.
Chair,
yes.
May I just, on behalf of the DA, actually support your motion? The former chair of this committee was a very good chair. And we certainly appreciate the work in terms of keeping the interest of learners in our country in mind as a first priority.
Thank you very much, Member Tim. I think that is highly appreciated.
Chair, there's a few apologies which I've received. Of course, Ms. Kubai, which you've just mentioned, Ms. Mpulisi, as well as Honorable Dudley. Those are the apologies I've received.
Thank you very much, Secretary Lyon. Let me welcome the department led by the DG. DG, for formalities, I'll just allow you to introduce your team, but by now, really, I don't think there is that much of you to introduce yourself to us, but for the formalities, for the sake of it, we have to do that. Can I just hand over to the DG to introduce for us, to us, the team that he has come up with, so that we can begin our meeting.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Bobby Subrayan. I'm the DG for Basic Education. With me is Mr. Paseka Njobe. Sitting across, he's the Acting Director in the DG's office. I also bring apologies from the Minister, who's embarked on triple C's, and the Deputy Minister, who is standing for the activities of the Minister. So apologies from them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. DG, I know last week you had a summit of which we were invited as a portfolio committee, but due to the proceedings within the Parliament, we couldn't attend, all of us. So our apologies to that. So that is why we are here, so that you can present to us what are the things that we are discussing on that day. And we are hopeful that the excellent plan that you are coming to present to us is the plan that is we all in the state to take this country forward in the education system, remembering that education is one of the priorities that we have as a country. So without the waste of time, DG, can you take us through this action plan? And honorable, all the members will be listening attentively so that we can engage with you at the end of your presentation. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, honorable chairperson, honorable members. Let me also, for the record, bring on behalf of the Ministry and the Department our congratulations to the former chair of this portfolio committee. We wish everything of the best in a new position, currently position as the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs. We also wish this committee all the best in finding a new chairperson, and we look forward to our continued constructive engagement with this committee. Honourable Chairperson, then turning to the presentation itself, as the Chairperson indicated, we are in the process at the moment of consulting key stakeholders. To that end, we had a symposium last week, which was very, very well attended. We had very strong engagement on the action plan, and all in all, the feedback we're getting is very constructive. It's therefore a welcome opportunity for us to present this action plan to the Portfolio Committee for Basic Education, because we believe it's your input, your understanding of its contents is absolutely critical. The action plan that I'm presenting here has followed largely what's in the Government Gazette, and that's because we don't want too many different versions, PowerPoint presentation and versions of the action plan circulating. So if honorable members look at the Government Gazette, you'll see that what I'm presenting here draws entirely from that Government Gazette. Secondly, what's important about the Gazette itself is that it contains two versions of the action plan. One, which is an extra B, is a more detailed discussion document, which explains what we have identified as our vision, what we've identified as design features, and how we've defined the content of the action plan, which is outlined in an extra A. An extra A is also written, members would observe, in a manner that is directed at multiple stakeholders. It's not directed at the department, it's not directed at the political principals, it's directed at all stakeholders in the system. And that, perhaps, is the most important dimension of the action plan. But let me then proceed with the introduction. The origins of the action plan can be traced to the green paper, more recently, published on national strategic planning by the presidency, and then also the monitoring and evaluation documents that were published by the presidency. So following the new administration coming in after the 2009 elections, the emphasis on planning created a new urgency in government. The Green Paper tried to take that forward, and this action plan is derived directly from that framework. The action plan describes what should be achieved by 2014 to improve schooling in South Africa. The focus is to a large extent on a set of goals, indicators, and targets and activities required by the departments to ensure that schools and civil society contribute to these changes that we seek to achieve. Now, because all administrations required to plan in accordance with the electoral mandate, that's what the electorate has provided as a mandate, and it's a fairly good planning horizon, which is why the action plan has got a horizon up to 2014. which coincides with the end of the current administration. However, it's important, and the Green Paper on strategic planning contains this as well as a central issue. We've got to have a medium-term vision in the country. And that is why you will find that this action plan to 2014 is located within a medium-term framework, which is Schooling 2025. So let me clarify. Schooling 2025 is our medium-term action plan, our medium-term plan for turning around the education system. Many people, the media has consistently referred to Schooling 2025 as the new curriculum. We try to clarify this at every opportunity, in writing and verbally. There's no new curriculum, firstly. Secondly, there's no curriculum called Schooling 2025. Schooling 2025 is the medium-term plan for turning around the schooling system. The medium-term plan. Within Schooling 2025, there's a detailed plan to 2014, which obviously has more firmer targets to achieve. So what will happen with this Schooling 2025 medium-term plan is that for every five-year segment, we'll have a detailed action plan. At the moment, we've got action plan to 2014, located within Schooling 2025, which frames action plan to 2014. When we come towards the end of action plan 2014, we'll have action plan to 2019 within Schooling 2025, and so forth. So clearly, that is what we're trying to do here. That's the lesson that one gets from international experience on planning. You can't simply have short-term plan. You can't simply have long-term plan. You need a long-term vision to have a sense of where you want to go to, but within that you need to be quite specific. Obviously, with your detailed action plan, which is about 5 years, 4 years generally throughout the world, what you've got to do is constantly reflect and assess how you're going, so that you can revise in accordance with your long-term vision. But it's important for us to say, Honourable Chair, where does this country want to be in schooling in 2050? So that we make sure we have a long-term vision. The other issue is that in South Africa since 1994, we've made huge strides in education. One of the things we've reflected on is maybe sometimes we change things too quickly and sometimes we may have instability at a policy level. So with this plan, we've created a sense that we want policy stability and we want a medium-term vision within which we can make specific changes. So basically, 2014 is what we want to achieve by 2014, and it must be seen within the bigger picture of what we want to achieve by the end of the first quarter of this century, which is the 21st century. So the action plan will be further revised. We're in a consultation mode at the moment, and will be revised until the minister is happy that she's had sufficient consultation. The closing date for the action plan was Friday past, according to the government gazette. The minister has indicated, though, if there are compelling inputs that people wish to make, she'll be open on an ongoing basis. Obviously, one can't have this thing open and flexible and ill-defined, because this thing has to drive budgets, it has to drive planning, etc. Indeed, it's already driving budgets and planning. But the minister said that she's open to engagement. The other important thing, honorable members, that I must emphasize, is that many of the goals in the plan are not new. They have been expressed previously in the President's State of the Nation address, various documents released by the presidency, in particular the 2009 medium-term strategic framework, and in the speeches and documents of the Ministry of Basic Education. Many goals are already widely supported, for instance, through multi-stakeholder quality learning and teaching campaign launched in 2008. So, if you followed the President's first speech following the 2009 elections, you'll find continuity between what was said then and what's in this action plan. Furthermore, what this action plan does, in accordance with explicit directives from the minister, it builds on the foundation that has been created. It is continuous with what has been done previously in the sector. So what is the purpose of the plan, Action Plan 2014 and Schooling 2025? Again, these are not two separate plans. 2014 is located within Schooling 2025. Firstly, it must contribute towards an improved schooling system. And you will see later, improved schooling system is measured solely by the improvement in learning outcomes. So learners are the core of this thing. And we're saying to do what we need to do, we need to look at schools. So it's to fix, to improve the schooling system. We need to ensure that we have long-term planning. South Africa, Honourable Chair, and I don't know if it's something peculiar to what we were doing just prior to democracy. Many of us were policy analysts. And the nature of our jobs were that we had to keep analyzing and producing policy perspectives. And therefore, we tended to be quite good in policy discourse, but we tended not to be very good in terms of long-term planning. And in part, long-term planning became unpopular because didn't work too well in certain central planning economies which tried it. But clearly we've learned lessons now, which is why we've balanced it here. A short-term linked to a long-term plan. But what we need in the system is some long-term planning that's critical. And Schooling 2025 does that. The important thing is to focus on practical uses of this plan. Honourable members, the intention of this plan and already what we're trying to do and what we've done is that the plan is not going to sit on a shelf. It's informing critical activities, interventions, budget decisions in the sector. It's a dynamic plan which can't be cast in stone. It must be adjusted in accordance with changing conditions and in accordance with lessons learned. Moving forward on the basis of existing building blocks, this is a key principle in the design of this plan. Promotion of more rigorous monitoring. And then seventh, communicating the plan to the nation. Now, this is not incidental. It's not typically what one would have where if you have a big strategy, you must communicate it. You must have a PR exercise. When we talk about communication here, it's an integral part of the plan. Because you read from the Government Gazette, the plan speaks to stakeholders, to parents, to officials, to teachers, to organizations, etc. And therefore it's important, if we want a sense of agency to operate with this plan, it's important that communication happen effectively. So communication is not just, you know, a way of popularizing the plan. Communication is a key pillar of the plan itself. Now, what we've done in the plan, and it needs to be explained so that we're all on the same page, is we've used goals, indicators, targets, and activities. When I say on the same page, I don't mean that we have the perspective on this matter. It's simply that people speak about these terms and very often attach different meanings to it, none of which are right or wrong, we believe. We believe, however, in a plan, it's important to make explicit upfront what you mean by these terms. And we acknowledge that it's debatable. Some people may have a completely different definition of output and outcome. What we don't believe is that we must spend months debating what these terms mean. We believe, rather, it's important to set out upfront what one means by it. So, a variety of goals is what we have in the plan. At the heart of the action plan is a set of long-term goals. A number of these goals are described in this document itself. There are three types of goals. Output goals, of which there are 13. And these focus either on what the quality of learning outcomes should be in measurable terms and how grade attainment indicators should be improved. Then we have foreground goals referred to improvements, which are basically process goals, but which parents and learners can observe directly. And then C, we have background goals, which refer to important improvements that may not concern parents and learners directly, such as improvements to administrative systems in schools. Let me just explain here. Key to this plan, and a difference to what we've done before, relates to two things. One is it's focused primarily on outputs which are measurable in the system. So we're not going to judge ourselves anymore by how much of inputs we've made into schools, how many policy documents we release, how many times we visit the school, how many times we go and drop things off by way of learning and teaching support, guides, and so forth. We're not going to measure our success according to that. We're not going to measure it in terms of how many overseas trips we made, how many agreements we signed. We need to be judged purely on whether the outputs that we set here which are measurable and which contain clear targets by a specific date are attained. And that's key to planning success. That's key to turning around the system. So we believe this is a fundamental departure in terms of planning. And international experience shows that if you want to turn around a system, whether it's education or health or housing, that is the approach one's got to adopt. It improves accountability because you focus on the right thing. So that's the first key thing around output goals. Secondly, this plan, surprisingly, but it's true, for the first time we have a plan for the entire sector. Not a plan for the national department, not 9 plans for the provinces. We have one plan with a common set of indicators. Targets set in accordance with the conditions of each province, but a common set of indicators. Targets which in time will bring all provinces, all learners to the same level in the country. And that is a key difference as well in this plan. If you look at B, foreground goals, you know, parents are not interested and frankly find it hard to understand when we say we are going to train our Purcell operators to run the Purcell system better. You know, parents are worried about their children's learning outcomes and whether, for example, the workbooks are going to be installed on time. And therefore, we're distinguishing between foreground goals and background goals. The foreground goals are explicitly defined, which will empower parents to exercise that which is their right, to monitor and hold schools and the schooling system accountable. Throughout the world, honorable members, the improvement of education systems very often happens when you've empowered parents. In this country, middle-class schools do better than poorer schools, definitely because of socioeconomic conditions, but also because parents in middle-class schools exercise accountability much stronger than other parents do in poorer schools. So this is an important thing that we've got to promote in the system. Indicators and targets, then, I'm going to 2. Most goals have one indicator that can be measured, ideally on an annual basis. A few goals have 2 such indicators. Again, it's about limiting what you measure. And then activities. As far as possible, the action plan indicates for each stakeholder in the system what activities should be engaged in to realize each of the goals. You will see here there are a number of features to the plan. It's about outputs, it's about process goals, it's about a plan for the entire sector, it's about a plan intended to inform stakeholders of their rights as well as what they can do to improve the system. So those are key features of the plan. Now, if you look at our desired educational outputs, you will see critical to the plan, as I've indicated, is that we have 13 output goals. It's a limited number. They are output goals defined in the first instance by the president. And when the president articulated it, he articulated it as 4 broad achievements. When we broke those things down, we came up with 13 output goals. So it's fully consistent with what the current president has put forward as that which is expected of basic education. And what was done at the time is it was located, the president located it within a framework of planning which was a sector plan and something focused on outputs. And that's what we try to take forward. Now, if you look at our learning outcomes, we follow the 2-pronged approach as I've indicated. Long-term planning in basic education must focus on increasing, firstly, the percentage of learners who have achieved the minimum competency. That's the first thing. Secondly, we also want to ensure that the average attainment of learners increases. It's an important distinction which I must explain. The first output is to say, at the moment we have about, say, 30% of grade 3s passing. We want to increase the number of grade 3s passing the annual national assessment to 60% by 2014. That doesn't tell you how much each learner got on average. It simply says 60% passes. So if 60% just get the minimum plus 1, they pass. So we want that percentage to increase. However, at the same time, we want the average score to increase. So we're setting an objective to say more learners must pass, but the average mark attained must also increase. So we're trying to have equity in terms of numbers, but we're also trying to progressively stretch ourselves to improve quality in the system. That's a very important distinction, honorable members. And you'll see here, firstly, we look at the number of grade 3 learners who by the end of the year would master the minimum language and numeracy, so it's literacy and numeracy, and you look at the right-hand column, we set targets for that. Then we go to grade 6 learners, grade 9 learners, and grade 12 learners. Again here, we're setting ourselves outcomes. If we, the number of bachelor's, matric passes, grade 12 passes who qualify for bachelor's program, increase in grade 12 learners who pass mathematics, and increase of past physical science. If you look at these six outputs here, it cuts across the system, it takes us away from our sole preoccupation with grade 12, it says we've got to fix up from the bottom. Remember when we say grade 3, we mean the foundation phase, we mean grade R to grade 3. When we say grade 6 assessment, we mean from grade 4 to grade 6 achieved. So now we're focusing on the entire system. So when we come back to portfolio committee in the years to follow, we can't come here and say, no, we've produced so much of materials and we've visited the schools again so many times and we've trained so many teachers only. That's important. But at the end of it all, the portfolio committee in parliament needs to hold us accountable for those targets. They say, you said you want to achieve by 2014 50%. Where are you? And why are you at that point? If you follow short. So that strengthens accountability. Because our problem in the past, generally, but specifically in the sector, basic education, is that we could report a lot about inputs. Whilst at the same time, and this came up at the very last hearing we were at the joint hearing of higher education and basic education on the annual report, is that we can achieve all those targets we set in our strategic plan, but the sector itself may not improve. This is what we're trying to address here. It's about outputs for the sector. Now, if you look at paragraph 3, we believe these outputs are ambitious, but they're feasible primary school improvement targets. Grade 3 and 6 target values referred in above table represent substantial improvements over the baseline. Now, honorable members, we've had to do a lot of work in the background. There's a whole document for members who are interested to analyze these indicators and how we can shift. It's a big stretch to move from about 30% to 60% in this time available. But we believe, all things considered, it's feasible, and we believe we must have a stretch target. And we've looked at other countries, we've looked at our own results over the years, and we've seen it is a stretch target. The annual national assessment started in 2008. There are two new important elements introduced in 2011. Firstly, we're doing grade 9, and secondly, we'll have external administration and verification of ENA, annual national assessment. Now, people may ask, and it's important to ask, how will annual national assessment improve quality? Firstly, it will do it because monitoring is important to influence and improve performance. ENA has not been used, nor will it be used to shame schools that do not perform well, nor will it be used as a basis for providing physical or monetary rewards to schools that perform well. Rather, ENA must be used as a means for knowing where to direct special efforts to improve schooling and what schools may be demonstrating the right approaches to teaching and learning. ENA is expected to improve performance in the following ways. Firstly, it is expected to improve the experience of teachers in applying appropriate assessment standards. Research, many different studies done, shows that teachers may not know collectively what standards are expected of the grade they're teaching in terms of assessment. That's what helps us to deal with that. It is expected to improve the experience of teachers in applying appropriate assessment standards. It is expected to improve the ability of districts and the provincial departments to direct human and physical resources where needed. It is expected to provide an incentive for schools to do well, not because they receive monetary rewards, but because teachers want to belong to a school that performs well, according to objective criteria. It is expected to improve the focus on learning outcomes in the school governance process. Honorable members, we are not going to do the following, and we will insist on not doing this and protect the system from this perversion. Where the newspapers publish the top 100 schools in the country without looking at conditions in schools. We will not do that. We will not do that at all. Because we believe a good school is not necessarily a school who gets middle class learners who are already bright and say they've got 100% pass rate. We believe a good school is to take difficult conditions and add value to their child's experience. So that's what we consider to be a good school. So we won't do that at all. Secondly, we will not make these little grade 3s, the grade 6s, and even the grade 9s feel like they're writing a grade 12 exam. We're not going to have grade 3 stressed before the annual national assessment. In fact, they're going to write their test without even knowing they're writing a test. Because it's simply, they don't have to study for the test. It's not going to be a test attached necessarily to names that we publish. It's about whether the system has succeeded or not. We will not be judging learners with this thing. We'll be judging schools and ourselves with this annual national assessment. We want to improve assessment practices in schools. Anecdotal evidence from ENA suggests the program has allowed teachers to become more aware of how the outcomes expressed in the curriculum statement should be assessed. Again, if you look at the revision to the curriculum, you look at workbooks and you look at ENA, they're all linked as a triad of interventions to improve quality in the system. Better target support by districts, encouraging schools to do better. We want to raise the profile of learning outcomes in school governance process, because at the moment SGBs work on making the school better, but they lack critical information. And I will provide that information to make school governance meaningful. It will encourage, we want to encourage improvements in grade 12. Also, we want to focus on learning outcomes, grade repetition, and dropping out. Because, honorable members, experience shows that if you focus only on learning outcomes, what tends to happen is you could encourage grade repetition and dropping out. Because teachers or principals, because they're worried about the results, could keep learners back who they think are going to spoil the school. You can't only monitor learning outcomes. You've also got to monitor repetition, and you've got to monitor dropping out. This is key, and we've tried to put into the plan ways in which to deal with that. And then, of course, improvement in the international context. All these things, SACMAC and TIMS, we will do. We'll also participate in POE. There's a new language one that's coming up. We're considering participating in this as well. And the reason for this is we want to ensure that where our country is going is benchmarked in accordance with countries of similar level of development. Also, we don't want a situation where our own annual national assessments become an easy option compared to international assessments. Now, if we look at improving our average achievement, which I've mentioned, again here we've got indicators. We've got the baseline. We've set targets for ourselves in the right-hand column for grade 6 in language, grade 6 in mathematics, and then we go to the other grades as well. The paragraph 13, if you look at this table here, honorable members, it simply looks at where South Africa was in 2007 in terms of the assessment here, which is SACMAC, and we were there, we scored about 320 at the same level as Uganda. Mozambique was above us, Kenya, Tanzania above us. And what we're saying by 2022, given our level of economic development, we should really be around Mexico, Trinidad, and Tobago. Obviously, if they drop by that time, we don't want to follow them in the drop, but we want to be at that point. If you look at grade 6 mathematics and you look at TIMS and SACMAC together, we are around, again, Dominican Republic and Qatar, Uganda above us, Tunisia, Kuwait, Tanzania, Swaziland, Botswana above us, Kenya fairly high up. And we say, with the intervention, and with where we are in terms of our economic development, we should really target again being at the level of Mexico and Georgia in this instance. If you look at terms again, we at the point where we Kazakhstan, we're below Kazakhstan, below Ghana, below Botswana, below Chile, you know, Philippines, which are at the same level of development as us, and we're saying by 2023, which is when that assessment will be done, we want to be around where Uruguay and Tunisia is. During the World Cup, we learned it's not Uruguay, it's Uruguay. So I must say Uruguay. Honorable members, then again, for great repetition, I've mentioned that we need to measure that, and here we have indicated in terms of that as well. We need to ensure that learners are effectively enrolled. But also ECD, a critical area, we've got indicators and targets there, include grade promotion from grade 1 to 9, and then ensure post-grade 10 access. And here we work with the Department of Higher Education and Training. Then, honorable members, if you look at what shapes the plan as well, we've got to fulfill our statutory obligations. In South Africa, currently, we have a participation of 97%. In this measurement, we compare favorably to any country of similar economic development throughout the world. We compare very favorably. However, the ministers indicated that that 3%, even though it's small, is still not good enough being out of school, because it amounts to about 250,000. Who are they? Where are they? We know many of them have special needs. Many of them are in rural areas. Many of them are very poor. Many of them suffer from illnesses currently. But the point is, in terms of our constitution, we have to cater for them. ECD is a critical area here, and we're looking at integrated ECD. And then age grade norm as well. Then FET and the transition out of school is a critical thing. Now, honorable members, those are the key outputs of the plan. There are two things then that's important to look at. Firstly, how do you deliver this plan from a multi-stakeholder point of view? We say key is the QLTC, but key too is the recognition that there are a number of stakeholders at play here. This thing can't be delivered by government on its own, even though government's obligations must be recognized and asserted, and government needs to be held accountable. But we need to bring in all the stakeholders. What this diagram does, which you have on paper in front of you, reflects how the different stakeholders need to come into synergy and alignment in order to deliver on the important objectives. Without allowing government or the department to abdicate its responsibility, but at the same time recognizing that no stakeholder on its own, including government, can deliver on these objectives solely. Now, you've got the targets, you've got the multi-stakeholder thing, but you still need to answer the question of how are you going to achieve the target? How are you going to ensure that more grade 3s pass? To do that, we're saying we need to bring into play these interventions which are on the screen. For all of these interventions, honorable members, there are detailed strategies, for example, teachers, infrastructure, school funding. In addition, provincial plans are being scrutinized now to ensure that they align and they speak to them. The accountability system is such, the minister signed the delivery agreement last week, Friday, so the entire sector, all MECs have signed it as well, and other ministers, the entire sector now is being held accountable in accordance with a common set of measurable targets. These targets have informed the delivery agreement. To put it the other way, the delivery agreement signed by the minister and MECs and other ministers contains surely what is in this action plan. It's a subset of what's in this action plan. So the detailed how is contained in bigger documents. And we presented some of those already, like infrastructure, teacher education, but we will continue to present those. And if you then say, put all the plans together, we'll have huge documents on the table in addition to the provincial plans itself. But what are they? They're the curriculum, including the curriculum revision, including teacher orientation, including ensuring that the required learning and teaching support materials are available to implement the curriculum. It's about teachers, critical, an adequate supply of young and inspired teachers, proper distribution of teachers in schools between subjects, but also geographically, to ensure that rural areas get teachers. Effective in-service teacher development, an area where we've been weak. We've got, give or take, about 400,000 state-employed teachers in the system. Only about 5% of those leave every year. Those teachers are going to be around for a long time. There are huge capacity challenges in certain areas of their teacher corps. In-service training is critical. We've got to make sure free service is done well, but in-service is a critical priority for the country. And then support linked to accountability. And support here is about ensuring that the district, teacher education, etc., plays its role. We need to make sure that accountability applies. We need to make sure that those districts that are weak are supported, but also accountability is asserted in regard to them. Textbooks and workbooks. To quote from the QLTC, effective schools require teachers, textbooks, and staff. We've learned that our procurement, supply, and the content of learning and teaching support materials are not optimal. We're spending a lot of money on that. The minister had one committee dedicated to looking at textbooks as part of the curriculum curriculum implementation review process. The workbooks are a key intervention which will be delivered at the beginning of next year to improve quality. The workbooks will be delivered from grades 1 to 6. School governance and management. Again, it can't just be training school governance. It's to ensure that the outcomes are achieved by making sure districts on an ongoing basis engage with SGD and support them. School funding, adequacy, and to make sure that the schools that deserve the money get it on time and spent properly. Budget allocations in provinces becomes critical. School infrastructure, again here, addressing the problem of most serious dysfunctionality at school. We calculated just eradicating those will cost us 40 billion. Where some schools don't have roofs, they don't have ablution facilities, so the factors that are contributing to dysfunctionality is the first priority. While we do that to ensure that existing schools have full services available in the school, i.e. specialist classrooms like laboratories, i.e. libraries, computer or information systems which are linked to libraries, to ensure that those things are rolled out. To do that, we want to ensure that not only do we put the money behind it, and the president is backing this very much, even though the country is under huge pressure, but not only do we put the money behind it, but we ensure that we have efficiency. We've reported to this committee that not long ago, a 30-classroom school would have cost 30 million in a province, which, if you look at the cost of your house, you know, it makes sense, 30 million. For the 30-classroom school. Then it went up. Recently, we had an example of a school built for about 110 million, 30-classroom school. Now, there's no clear reason as to why that escalation happened. But if you spend that amount of money, and if you assume you're spending it inefficiently, then you could have built three schools with that money. Or you could have upgraded existing schools in terms of science laboratories, you know, specialist rooms, libraries, etc. But we haven't been successful in that, which is why you will see in our infrastructure plan, one of the key things is coordination of planning, design, expenditure, consistent with the norms on infrastructure, norms and standards on infrastructure. Learner well-being, again here, in poor areas, one of the big challenges to effective learning relates to school functionality and teachers themselves. But it's also got to do with the well-being of learners. Honourable members, we have many learners in our system who suffer from mobility, because of illnesses of many folks, because of nutrition and a whole range of issues. The school nutrition program has helped. But we've already started work with the Department of Health. And the Minister of Health is extremely enthusiastic to ensure that we bring back to the school, you know, health services, health assessments early on, grade 1, to ensure that we pick up problems early. We're also looking at social services with the Department of Social Development. So we need to address those issues, which is a key intervention. Inclusive education, again, we've reported to this committee, it's an area where we've been very, very weak. Our success rate has not been good in this area. Our policy in terms of the white paper on full service schools, on mainstreaming, has not met the targets we set. It's an area we've got to work very hard on, and therefore it's a key intervention in the action plan. And then support by district offices. Again, if you talk school functionality, you've got to make sure districts work. E-education strategy is a critical one. We know that learning for a long time, for decades, in fact for over a century, is dependent on information. Increasingly now, your access to information, your ability to access it quickly, your ability to process it, your ability then to synthesize it becomes critical. And therefore, e-education is key as a pedagogic vehicle, but also as a source of information. E-education linked to library and information services becomes a critical issue. Yeah, we always thought that e-education actually gives us a more cost-effective means for dealing with information. It's so true on paper. In reality, what happens is you set up a computer lab, it's broken into, and you lose your equipment, which deprives you of your service. So we're working now on trying to deal with that problem. And I think we've got solutions by bringing in the community into it and also using new options of information technology. And we believe this will address the problem. Where we've lost libraries, we've lost computer labs, we've lost science labs, etc., in the process. So this is what helps in that process. It's important to integrate these initiatives. Teacher development as well depends on a good e-education strategy. And we're linking it into that intervention. And then the role of the national department. Again, honorable members, we're on record as having said this year to this committee that the way we structure the national department must reflect our orientation of working with and through problems. And we've already done that. So if you look at all of these interventions I've just mentioned, honorable members, please don't see them as discrete interventions and count them one at a time. They're integrated. They must be geared towards not simply initiating activity in school, but they must be geared towards achieving the outcome. When I sit in meetings now in the DBE, always provinces, somebody makes a presentation, the first question they ask is, so how will this contribute to the output? If they can't show that, then tell you they haven't made their case. In conclusion then, and summary, let me make these points by way of emphasis and reiteration. The plan seeks to build on existing policies and the momentum of existing strategies. Let me make the point that our achievements have been huge in the sector. And what we seek to do is to improve on that trajectory. The plan embarks for the first time on an outcome-focused approach and provides for integration in the entire sector. That's a key difference in the plan, in our plan. The key dimensions of the plan I've spoken to are the purpose. It's important to keep that in mind. It's important to understand the distinction between action plan to 2014 and schooling 2025. I repeat, schooling 2025 is not our new curriculum. It's our plan. The curriculum, everything we do is located within that. I've spoken about goals, indicators, targets, and activities, and how these terms are used. I've mentioned the education quality output and the grade attainment outputs as part of our 13 goals. I've spoken about our framework for improving schools and the intervention that will happen. This process of consultation including this presentation here, is critical for this plan's success. And therefore, Honorable Chair, I want to stop at the point that I started, which is to thank you for the opportunity to present. I look forward to the engagement, and also to say that all inputs we receive will definitely shape the finalization of this plan. The plan in its content is already shaping our budgets and provincial budgets and the plans that are on the table, and will increasingly, in the next financial year, shape things even stronger. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG, for a good presentation that you have just given to us. I know members have got so much to say, so much areas that you need to engage on your presentation, but before I even give them the chance to do that, I think, DG, at least you are giving us a direction that we are able to measure your output, and at least we are going to see the value for money that has been put in your department, just to know that you get the bulk of it for education. And indeed, when you look at the presentation, at least we see that indeed education is a societal issue, the way you're involving all the stakeholders to have input on what is happening in our education system or the future of our learners. But then let me give this chance to honorable members to comment, pose question, and get clarities in the presentation that has been put forward by the DG. Over to you, members. I'm noting hands. I'll start with Honorable Mshwana, Honorable Makubela, Honorable Mashishi, Honorable JJ, Honorable James, and Honorable Smile, and that Honorable Mda, and that order. And DG, I'll just allow the members just to say anything, everything. We'll just sit down with the questions and others, so that you can comment at the end of them all. In that order, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. And yeah, I need to apologize. I came late. But I also want to thank the department for the plan they are giving to us. But one needs to speak to the seriousness of the need out there. We see the plan, and this plan has to happen. My questions are three. I'll start with the ECD issue. The ECD, at present, is largely in the hands of NGOs, unless if someone can prove me wrong, especially in rural areas, such that early childhood education, important as it is, it's with the NGOs. And I'm checking if the department has a plan to make it public. I know the plan here speaks, but I want to check the how part. Because without the real foundation, the learners will always struggle when they get trust. So that ECG should not only be taken seriously in paper, but it should be taken seriously in practice. On page 15, under number 16, there is still a question whether the learners got formal and informal education. I think we should be very clear. We need to know that the education that they get when they go to grade R was formal. We need to have steps, because without making that right, we will be like sitting and talking nicely, and the situation may remain there. And that is a bleak situation to me. And to increase quality, we need to take this very seriously. The second question that I want to ask, or rather something that I want to talk to, is the interface training. Mostly because education is dynamic. You know, it changes every day. And of course, even if people go and get the highest qualifications, because education itself changes, in-service training is very serious, but that also is mostly in the hands of NGOs. When you go there, you find that the NGOs, I don't know whether they get tenders or what, but they end up doing the greater slice than the Department of Education itself. I'm checking if it's not possible for the the bad man of education to get up, to be able to give this themselves. And you spoke of something very serious, the learner well-being. But I'm checking if we understand exactly what we mean by that. Learner well-being, especially in rural areas, we have kids born poor cities. It's not a story. They are born. These kids have done nothing because they have not done the activities that put them there, but they are born. You know, they are born in that particular state. And if you teach them, you are saying to these little kids, who are born in this cruel world, they are born already positive. And the people who come down to primary schools there to educate teachers on or have interest in IKB committees, if all schools have it, there are schools that don't even have the committees. But if you have committees where you have everybody on board, all the stakeholders that they meet at least once to talk about what to do to improve the status, it's something, but it's done by the NGOs again. And I'm saying, when can the Department of Education take this? Because the Department of Education is very clear. It knows that this is what it has to be done. But at the end of the day, it's given to the NGOs. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, just a few questions from me. Usually, when we have got these plans at the national level, they take time for us to realize the impact. I'm quite conscious of the fact that you said this plan has got a buy-in by all provincial structures and so on. So your targets are centrally indicators that everybody else will be working towards those. And there are timelines as to when those are supposed to be achieved. But we're not starting now to have targets and indicators that we're working towards. Now, implementation and achievement on those is going to be something else. And I thought there should be greater emphasis on that, to saying now that we hashed out this particular plan, the enforcement, the actual implementation and achievement towards that is an element that I thought we needed to look at. You are saying again that the annual assessment, when we're talking grade 3 assessment or 6 or 9, you're talking the entire phase. That will mean grade R to 3 if it's that block, or it will be 4 to 6. And I wanted to understand how you're doing it on the other one, say 4 or 5, before grade 6. Is it just inherent in the grade 6 one, or you mean there will be particular things you will be doing in that regard as well? The third issue is the 3% that is not in school for now, which we can't clearly account for. And you said it amounted to 250 children. Yes, 250,000 children. And to me, the bulk of that will be in farms. But I don't see the actual intervention of what we're doing in that regard. We're talking more about the 97% in terms of this plan. And I know it won't just be your job alone, but I'm saying, is there any conscious effort that takes us towards addressing that and some targets to see we could have been able to get all of those? There's not much that the plan talks to regarding FET. Clearly, there might not be work really done even here. The aspect is indicated, but there's no content to saying what is it that we will want to be doing. Unless if you covered it elsewhere, but on page 16, it's item 18. It's just FET and does not say anything in that regard. But what I wanted to raise is there are children who branch to FET. Some of them were in a no-fee school, for instance.
and their socio-economic status are such that they were not supposed to pay. They are very poor. All of a sudden, when they are in a FEC institution, they are expected to part with about 18,000 or something like that. What is it that is being done in that particular regard for them? The last one, the district were supposed to somewhat get standardized across the board, but provincially, there happen to be different structures altogether, and their effectiveness is questionable. Is there anything by now that has been able to come out to saying this is how the district office would look like, this is the kind of organogram, this is the kind of tasks or duties that they will be actually doing and so on and so on, just for their effectiveness and uniformity in whatever they do. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the plan. And then you also indicated that you achieved a lot, and then you also still need to improve here and there. And then I just want to check about P6 on the own goal 5. Where you said that the subject literacy, mathematical literacy, is not counted within the indicator. I just want to get clarity on that one, on the indicator of math led. And then again on page 18. Page 18. I think it's where you talk about the SGB. Yes. School governance and management. And then I think that area is very much important for the SGB to get more information, because most of them, they don't get the support or whatever, because we get people say that they don't get the support on that one. And then my last input is on the skill development. I don't know whether maybe I didn't check on the plan. I don't think it's very clear on skill development. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to make some few inputs and maybe two questions, if not three. Chairperson, let me start by welcoming the presentation and saying to the department, this is a very good plan. And if we can implement this plan correctly, we'll achieve our goal as a country. Chairperson, my worry is on the stakeholders' issue. When the stakeholders accepting this plan or this document, are they ready to honor this plan as their document or not? Because to make an input to a document, not making an ownership, is another problem. It is not the first time for our department to make such plans. It differs with years that are written here. So the plan that we had even previously, maybe it is amended somewhere, somehow. But the important part is that stakeholder, especially a parent. Will the parent play a major role which is needed or not? And how are we going to bring them on board? Because they need thorough education. They need an induction so that in our public meetings and whatever, they need so that they can have that information which is contained in this document. And Jefferson, another word that I have is the communication of the plan to the provinces. How are we going to communicate this plan as department to the provinces, because this plan must speak to the provincial document, or the provincial document must speak to this national document. And when you go to the district, go to circuit, go to school level, you must have one document. If not one, but you must have one content that relates to this document, of which it will enable us to deliver what is expected from us. And also, Chairperson, the monitoring of teacher development in the teachers, in the infant training. How does the department monitor that teacher development in terms of output and input? Because we keep on training educators, but some of them, they drop on the way. How do we take audit on that score? I think it's very key towards this document. And the human resource, the sharing of human resource. Some schools don't have sufficient educators, some schools have got many educators. That part of regionalization, that language is ringing on the ground from long ago, regionalization every year. How do we control it in order to make sure that we implement this document, all of us? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I'd like to challenge the Director General on 3 points. The first has to do with infrastructure. There's 40 billion rand that's sitting there that will be spent on infrastructure, and that is most welcome, because the infrastructure needs of our schools are quite demanding, especially in rural areas. The problem is that the provinces are not spending the money properly around that. There's been 3 disclaimers issued by the Auditor General for schools for the departments in the Northwest and Limpopo and the Eastern Cape. I think that's right. And in qualifications as well for 3 other provinces. And I've had some first-hand experience with what's happening in the Eastern Cape, is that the money is allocated, but the departments do not spend the money properly on schooling, and the result is hot school. So, and Minister Pravin Gordhan made a point about the fact that these allocations are not properly administered and expended, and that he is looking at introducing penalties for superintendent generals who do not do their job properly. This is a major question, and it's hobbling our schools because there's a lack of provincial capacity and accountability around this issue. So it's not good enough to say that there's the money. What we need is the spending of that money in an appropriate and accountable manner. Firstly. Secondly, speaking as an educationalist, it is not good enough to have regular testing. It's not good enough to have the degree of testing we have today when it comes to mathematics, to the basics, mathematics, writing, and reading. What you require are regular tests, all the way up to the grades. I mean, it's preferable to have tests every year, in fact, in terms of international best practice. But if that's not feasible, at least every second year, up to national testing to see exactly what the improvements are that you are suggesting. But my final point is the biggest challenge is how, you're absolutely right, DG. We've been awash with policy discussions and some very good ones and policy documents since 1994. What we've lacked is long-term planning, and what you presented here is a fabulous example of what we actually need in this country is long-term planning. All the way to 2025. And we have some of the administrative machinery in place, including a national ministry for planning, to make this happen. Now, the difficulty is here is how you cope with political interference. Now, let me go back. How does one deal with instability in the political system? Because you need stability for planning. You need stability in civil service commitment. That's right. But then ministers change every 5 years, and when a new minister comes in, this has to be done, and a new DG is appointed, and so on. So that's a disruptive part of a normal political cycle. I mean, that's what happens, and that's normal. what is difficult is if you have political interference of another kind in that planning process. The interference of SATU, for example, and teachers' unions, or the union community, who interfere in our schooling, and we know that. And they go way beyond the bounds of what's allowed. So that's one level of interference. It's not necessarily a question that you can answer, but it's something we as a society must take care of. It's how do you deal with political interference? Because you can plan as beautifully as you want to. That planning gets disrupted by not having proper boundaries between politics and civil administration. So, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have three questions. One is on the output approach, outcomes approach. The other one is on the outcomes, learning outcomes, and then the one on mathematics specifically. I just want to ask DG, you will need trust. You need to trust the people that will have to execute this plan. Have you consolidated that trust? And how far are you with the consultation? So that when the consultations are concluded, you know you now can trust the stakeholders to do this plan and to get the outcomes. Because if we do not have the trust from those that must do the job, then this plan will be once again another plan. Then on learning outcomes, although you indicated teachers in this plan, I think the teachers, with regard to learning outcomes, and in my sort of simple terms, what is going to happen in the classroom, what quality education is taking place in the classroom. I want to ask the question whether, the teachers, the plan for the teachers specifically, is in place. Because we need teachers to understand that the learner is the first in this partnership. There is a learner, teacher, department, parent partnership, which always should be recognized, always should be honored. And a breakdown in that partnership, especially with regard to the learner, then we will not achieve. This plan will not be achieved. So the teachers, I think the plan for them must be more clear and more specific and emphatic, because they will be the engine room for this, to have improved learning outcomes. Then lastly, and maybe I should say this to Malusi or to other people or to the planners, are you going to continue in mathematics in the present way? The blunt question is, are you considering bringing back higher grade and standard grade? Get away with the three papers, three question papers, where geometry is in the third paper and is optional. I believe geometry is so fundamental in mathematics. You cannot put it one side there. It must be an integral part of your questions paper and not an option. It must be part of it. Because the kind of discipline and the way to reason and how to solve problems in mathematics is more fundamental, is more sort of proactive in geometry than in other, like in algebra. So I think that we need to look at bringing back higher grade and standard grade, and then looking at having the two question papers where geometry is part of question paper number two. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair. let me also apologize for arriving late, Chair. It was not because I know that the chairperson is now the deputy minister. I was not being disrespectful to the chair who is there now. Maybe let me start by, I'm sure now the department knows that I'm a very appreciating member of parliament for this portfolio committee. Let me start by appreciating the plan, understanding that it's intended, as Minister Njimutse has well articulated it in the DG, it's intended at addressing a whole lot of problematic issues in our education system that have been identified, that have been left hanging for quite a long time. And I think looking at the initiative itself and the plan overall, it gives you a picture and a sense of hope of a department that seeks to introduce measures of changing the system to be able to attain for its beneficiaries, who are the learners in this particular context, what is due to them, which is quality education. And I'm making that overall comment, Chairperson, to the DG, cognizant of the fact that even though the plan in itself may be good and may derive from good intentions, it's still going to encounter a whole lot of other bottlenecks, because remember, what is being addressed is a pile of issues that have been there for quite a long time. And there is not going to be an easy and smooth introduction of this new paradigm change in as far as coming to turning around the department, I mean the system of education in our country. So I'm trying to say we're going to need to see the department being committed itself as it drives this this initiative to our schools. But I've got just three questions, Chair. And I want to start by saying to the DG as a question. I understand, unless I'm wrong, I understand that what made this towards the plan which is now being introduced of achieving schooling to a goal of 2025, where it will be, our schooling system will be stable and stabilized. It is derived from an OBE curriculum that has not been able to work, and which I think to a greater extent has created more problems to the system than the solution. But now, noting this plan, is the package of the plan, DG, quality education or curriculum shift? I do know that if you talk of curriculum shift, it will, of course, deal with the quality of the education that you are giving. But I'm deliberately separating the two, because I am trying to make it a point that if the department is focusing on quality now, let the market receive what we intend to give it. Let's sell what is required. If we say the education system now is lacking on quality of the education that is being given to the kids, let the plan as it is be quality focused. I'm not saying as of now we just left out Chairperson the quality in it, but I'm saying there is already access. There is no issue in South Africa about access of education. And if a person can, in this forum, can maybe say we still have a problem in as far as accessibility of education, I'm sure it may be an issue that is different, varying from place to place, not necessarily a fundamental issue of access being problematic in its context. So I'm saying, DG, we need to get that unpacked for us, so that if the plan is quality focused, then the plan is able to be sold to the market as a quality intervention kind of a plan. The second question, remember the minister when she took the reins in the department last year, actually when the department was introduced last year, she articulated the issue of the language, the mother tongue in particular, where she articulated that maybe part of the issues that we need to find ways of dealing with in the education system is to try and get to a point where we must be able to check whether the language does contribute to the manner in which our package is given to the child. Whether it's on the basis that the language that we're using may not be the language that the child is able to understand it. Does the plan capture, or has the plan captured the issue of the language? And if it has been left out here now, what has since been the departmental stance on what the minister had articulated when she took the department? The last one, Chairperson, I think I'm even helped by the plan, because I think it's on page 14, where it deals with the age issue in as far as the schooling system, where it takes the issue of a situation, like I do know that we encounter in our more social in rural schools, where you would find that you are going to have a boy who is 13 years old, going to be starting to go to school for the first time, actually to go into grade 1, and would not be coming from a grade R or anything. But on the other side, the departmental policy, if I'm not mistaken, you will correct me also, teacher, it says that from grade R, the child must be 7 years old. I'm sure all of members will remember that I once raised earlier this year in this committee that don't we think that maybe the department also needs to find a way of reviewing the age in as far as admission? Because if you are saying, for instance, here, ensure that children remain effectively enrolled in school up to the year in which they turn 15, it tells them that where you want the child to be acceptably in an age where he may be in this particular phase of schooling, this is the age that that child must have. But if you don't take consideration of the fact that you expect the child to at least be at grade 12 when the child is 16, I'm just making an example, but you don't expect the child to be at school when the child is 5 years old. For me, there's going to be a dichotomy and contrast, and I think if it may not necessarily be part of what we must do in the plan, but maybe as a long-term issue, we may want to attend to it and say maybe some of the issues that we want to address and want to achieve in as far as the age restrictions for the schooling system, we may want to also look at the age in which we admit school, kids in the school. Because if you admit me at the age of 8 at grade R, then you must expect me to be still at school at the age of 21. I'm just making an example, because you are also going to create space to say not every child will come to school and be brilliant and clever. There are going to be those who are going to repeat classes, like the document is addressing that matter. So if you are saying that we are going to be able to create space for children to repeat classes maybe once, then it tells you that the admission age must be attended to as well. That one may just be a sponsor view that may not necessarily be in the document. And I'm not saying it must be inserted in the document. I'm saying the department, on a long-term goal and on a long-term planning, it may want to come to and address this matter. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. DJ, can I just make a comment before you respond to the questions? As to say, when you listen to the members' questions and comments, I think everybody acknowledges that you do have these plans within the department, but really the pace in which you implement it is quite questionable, and what is going to be different about the plan that you're bringing now, so good as it might be, but what is it that is going to change? Look at inclusive education. You have just reported that nothing has been done that much. But look at when the white paper 6 was out, but really we don't see any movement on that. What is it that is going to change now? And looking at your branches, your provincial departments of education, your different entities within the department, seemingly one hand does not know what the other hand is doing. And looking at the plan, you see that those they need all to come together to make sure that this plan does go forward, and so that we achieve what is in this plan. So if you can just tell us really, as we respond, what should we say will be new with this plan? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, for those questions. I'm reminded from these questions and from the summing up by the Chair about the question that's always put to me, which goes as follows. You were DG before, didn't you learn your lesson? Why did you become DG again? And I was out for a few years sitting as a splendid consultant without much problems. You know, you sort of criticize, which is an easy thing to do. But I say that, honorable members, to say that I'm not going to sit here making any excuses. I'm not going to sit here and try and spin anything. To the extent that honorable members have raised problems, they are real problems. Whether it's measures of progress, or whether it's measures of our capacity, or whether it's measures of our commitment, those are real problems. And I think what the department is trying to do at the moment under the stewardship of the minister is don't deny, try to fix this issue. So we certainly take on board everything that honorable members say. And what I'm going to respond now to is not to disagree or to defend or to massage. It's simply saying all these issues are acknowledged. Whether it's from budgeting to the problems in the provinces, to the problems in schools, all 27,000 of them, to the problem with teachers, all 400,000 of them, to the problem of learners, all 12 million of them, these are huge weights that we carry on our shoulders. I don't want to make excuses, but the point is, what we've got to do, and this is what I say to people constantly, is we need to show movement in this area. So we won't fix everything. I'll be here next year, this time, and there'll still be problems, I know that. But what I need to do under my tenure, and what the minister needs to do under her tenure, is show that we're moving, Chair, as you're saying, at a sufficient pace, is the word you're using. And I think that's the challenge that we've identified, where we want to go to. And that's which, it's that approach which will help me at least feedback. Because if I go now to the airport, I'm going to meet 10 people, I'm going to tell me about the problems. There's going to be at least 5 people who won't want to greet me because of the problems with education. All of whom were my big friends last year, this time actually, before I came back into government. So the issue is that I'm not going to just own the problem. I'm simply saying we need to fix up and show progress is very good. But let me take this question one by one. Honorable Member Muswana, ECD accurately critical. Let me just say that for grade R currently, we've moved to about 60% grade R of the Republic. We've made major improvements. Major improvements. However, one of the problems in that in public schools is that not all the educators are employed under conditions of service of public employed teachers. So that's the issue we want to do. And we want to move that figure up. So we say the bulk of grade R must be in public schools and the teachers must be paid in accordance with the conditions of service and teachers there. And they must be professionalized and they must improve quality. Some parents still believe that they don't want to send their children to grade R. That we can't stop. Remember, grade R is not compulsory. Grade 1 is compulsory. So that's an issue which we still manage. The point is we're saying that the percentage of learners in grade 1 who receive grade R must increase in percentage. And the quality must improve. If we take the percentage of learners in grade 1 who come from poor homes, would receive great honor. And that's a critical issue that's addressing the question. The other dimension of honorable members' question relates to pre-grade R issues. That's the big challenge. And there, it is largely offered by NGOs because there isn't government facilities that offer pre-grade R, 0 to 5. It's also an area offered by social development, not R. But it's something that we need to develop an integrated plan on. So social development, health, and basic education need to address that question. It's an area that we're trying to address. Whether we'll move in that area, 0 to 5, to formal state-like institutions is a question that we have to discuss in quite a bit of detail. It's got huge implications. But the issue is that we need to ensure that children 0 to 5 from poor households have access to better ECD, healthcare. ECD is healthcare, education, social, all of those things. That needs to be approved. That's part of the service. It's an important area to raise. In terms of internet, it's dynamic. We didn't have the hands of NGOs. We are right. We've been working very closely with higher education institutions. And we found that overall, not all, but generally speaking, higher education institutions aren't very good for ECD. I mean, internet. They're not very good. Therefore, we need a combination of improving
higher education institutions, working through with NGOs, but ensuring increasingly the department itself, the curriculum advisors, district offices, and so forth, start contributing better. And that's part of our teacher education framework. Learner well-being, again, very important. In fact, I did a study before I got back into government on children in school from grade R upwards who are positive, but because of successful entry retrovirus are succeeding in school, but still suffer from illness. What does that mean to the system? It's a big issue. The numbers are fairly large. So whereas the thought inclusive ed cases for a certain percentage, that percentage is actually bigger. So you're absolutely right, it's an issue that we've got to address. Honorable Member Masubela, in terms of the other one, ENA, look, the grade 3, 6, and 9 ENA that we conducted, we're thinking about externally administered ENA. However, ENA will be conducted from grade 1 to 6, including all the grades, administered by the school and moderated. So that's what happened there. But as a system, we've got to choose selective grades. And that relates to the point that Dr. Jane, Honourable Jane raised there about testing and international experience. Let me say that there's no country of similar level of economic development that does annual national assessments externally monitored, externally administered every year in every grade. There isn't a single country. Even developed countries struggle. Brazil at the moment has gone very ambitious, but they're only doing a small percentage at the moment. In fact, they're not even touching rural areas. They're doing highly populous urban. So this thing is a big project to run this thing. Remember, if you look at a PhD now, where they serve is there, and to think we want to put the system into that every year for all the grades, we're asking for a huge burden. And we've got to balance these two things. So we're saying now, let's do grade 3, 6, and 9. Let's look at how we sequence it in terms of alternate years. But let's get the system right so that it works better. And that's huge. The important thing about these things, and this relates to Honorable Member James's point, is the credibility of the assessment and how you do the results of the notes. That's what determines. And that's what we've got to look at the system as well, without burning the system too much. About 3% of our menu on farms, yes, that is a big issue. It's part of our large intervention, and the problem of getting schools on farms to learn a transport to school or to multiple teachers. And it's a whole area that we're trying to address, and that is difficult. Your other question related to FET, and it's not here. We mentioned it broadly, but remember, FET colleges is not a function of the school. It's a function of ETT. And in their plan, they speak about that in quite a bit of detail. So we've got to look at the two plans linked to each other. Districts, about standardizing them, yes, we put out the document. We haven't wronged it yet because it's an unfunded mandate if you do that, the problem. But what provinces are doing is they're using our document. However, parallel to that, the Department of Public Service Administration brings an assessment currently of this structure because they've got a directive from the cabinet to try to align health districts, social development, you know, education districts, municipal boundaries, etc., together. So they're doing that work of standardizing. They're trying to ensure that the two processes are aligned. But the big question to ask is yes, we must standardize posts and resources. But we have an experience in education where you get some 100 that's got the same staff and resources as another one, but performs much better than the other. So it's not just people. Of course, it's not just folks. It's not just resources. It's about how you use them. And that, we found that more important than some of the other issues. Honorable Member Mashishi, in terms of math literacy, the reason why it's not in there is that we want to clarify that the indicator deals with mathematics only. The indicator is not the including literacy as a measure. So we then want to increase mathematics. But math literacy is still part of the curriculum, so it's important. Don't take mathematics, not take math literacy. But for the indicator, it's not part of it. School governance, we need more information. Absolutely agree with that. It's part of the plan. and skills development not here in the plan, our only concern on skills development is the skills development of HR within basic education. But skills development is a broad function, the function of HR. What is our plan is teacher development and HR development, as far as skills development is concerned, but not overall skills development. In terms of technical aspects of the curriculum, that is an issue which is important for basic education and is part of our broader curriculum intervention. Honourable JJ, why is the stakeholder issue when accepting? Okay. Yeah, the stakeholders, when you started talking, Honourable Member, I thought you would be talking about the teachers. But since we're talking about parents, because very often when people talk about stakeholders, they talk about parents. But, I mean, you're right. Key to this plan is empowering parents, giving parents results, and making sure parents engage. We've got clear design plans and intentions to make sure that parents play their role. And as I've indicated in my presentation, in poor schools we believe that parents aren't playing the kind of role that contributes to improvement for many reasons, many reasons. But we need to get to those reasons and improve them. Communicating the plan to PEG to get buy-in. Again, the big changes to this plan is that we have a delivery agreement signed by MEC. That's the first thing. Secondly, the president himself takes the plan and the delivery agreement to the PCC, which, as you know, all the premiers participate. So it's the first time we're getting that level of engagement. On a budget side, we meet on a regular basis in a meeting which includes the 9 provincial heads of education and myself, the DG of Treasury, and the 9 heads of Treasury in the province, where we meet on budget issues. And again, these are all efforts that we try. It doesn't mean we're going to solve all of these problems. We've got to try. The important thing is the president now has a means for the first time to hold the minister, MECs, and premiers accountable for what happens in basic education, in health, etc. And we've got to work hard to make sure that this thing succeeds. And what the honorable member has raised, and others have raised as well, the chair has raised this as well, and many speakers have raised this. A plan is fine. But unless we have the commitment, unless we have the orientation across the system, we are not going to succeed. And frankly, I experience this daily even in my own department. To get people to understand what different orientation is required for this plan to succeed. It can't be business as usual. We can't write guidelines and documents and send it to provinces. That's not going to work. We can't expect teachers to come to school at 7:15, 7 o'clock, and senior managers in my department come to work at 9 o'clock and up at 9. You can't have that. The whole orientation must change. So it's something that we are addressing. Monitoring teacher development, yes, it's a key area. What we're doing now is SAFE is developing a system for continuous professional development to accredit teachers with points for all development they do. What they're also ensuring is that every course taken by teachers must have points attached to them and must be accredited and quality assured. So between SAFE, ETDP, CETA, the department, we're trying to ensure that we monitor the content and the quality of programs that teachers engage with. And then sharing HR, the issue you raised is a big issue, very big issue. We reported the last time we were here about how much it's costing us excess education in the system. It runs into billions. There are policies to deal with. We need to make sure the will is there. Many provinces have done it, some haven't. And we're working with those provinces that are not doing it properly. Honourable Member James, on the infrastructure thing, the points you raised in principle are correct. Just a correction on the 40 billion, I said that's what we need. I didn't say the money's there. We're engaging, and when we ask for that, but the budget pressures are such that the national department didn't get that money. Provinces have got infrastructure money, which is quite good money. But that doesn't detract from the substance of your point about capacity to spend. And I agree with you entirely. Which is why, as part of our infrastructure plan, and part of what I presented here, we're creating substantial capacity in the national department to monitor, to design, to support infrastructure norms, etc., in construction, to ensure efficiency in dealing with it.
Just the other thing that people must monitor constantly when we're dealing with infrastructure. In many provinces, the agency that builds schools varies. In some cases, it's the Department of Education. In other cases, it's Public Works. But whenever there's a problem, irrespective of whether Public Works does it or not, the department is blamed. So we must be careful in monitoring who's responsible for problems in provinces. Because I'm not saying it's only Public Works. I'm not saying it's only education. But I'm saying between those two, one's got to ascertain in specific provinces what is the problem. But I think there are problems overall, which is why the DBE is creating capacity to deal with it. I've tried to answer the question Honourable Member James raised about testing, and then the other one about long-term planning and political interference, etc., and unions and so forth. Look, you know, this is an issue which happens in any democracy, and sometimes it's less severe in our country than others. We look even at highly industrialized countries like the United States. If you look at the Obama administration at the moment, despite it being a very federal country, you find that there's huge, huge changes in personnel and policies with every new president that comes in. You look at Sarkozy at the moment in France, massive changes that happen there, and you don't even hear of the administration in this discourse in France, even though France prides itself under Gaullism to have been the quintessential civil service, outstanding in its independence and longevity. But these problems exist, and it's the nature of democracy. However, we believe that in education, if we again empower parents and we deal with outcomes, doesn't matter which political players are dominant or hegemonic in that environment, in that space at any point in time, parents will insist on learning outcomes. That's what parents will insist on. And that is critical. And if you look at the indicators and so forth that we've indicated here, they come from the current administration. And in any set of indicators, they are politically determined. The action plan has to be politically determined. It is politically determined. And again, if you look at the contents of this action plan, and you look at it in past plans, there's a great continuity. What this plan tries to do is to say, how can we improve on what we've done before? So even though there's a new administration, there's about focusing on results, but in terms of continuity, there's a large degree of continuity. So I'm saying that there are issues there that one's got to look at in terms of ensuring implementation. Whether unions will support or not support success is always got to do with the nature of unionism. And again, there it's got to do with how we deal with that issue. And I think, again, the key intervention required there is to empower parents about the success or the interest of learners at the end of the day. Honourable Member Smiles, in terms of outcomes, need trust and so forth, have we consolidated? Are we sure we can trust stakeholders? That's a key point you make. You know, have we consolidated? We've consulted a lot. I don't think at any point in time one can say you've consolidated, because we've consolidated a lot. And then you get an event, like, for example, industrial action, which affects where you spend. And we've got to, as an administrator, our jobs are to manage that process. And the way we managed the industrial action was to stand our ground in terms of the mandate the executive gave us and take, you know, whatever pressure there was, but at the same time to ensure that there's life after the strike, that our relationship is positive and constructive with all stakeholders thereafter. And this sort of tussling and tensions will continue. But the point is, we've got to progressively work towards consolidating. With stakeholders, the QLTC is working. With officials, we have to have a combination of accountability and support. As I said, when you look at the provincial education departments or national, there are huge challenges about effectiveness, about work ethic, about all those things. I'm not going to deny those things here. It's something we've got to address and work hard at. Some of those things make us very unpopular, but the point is we've got to do it. Learning outcomes, is there a plan in place for teachers? they must understand the learner is first. Again, yes, teacher development is key. It focuses on competencies and pedagogy, but you're right, it must also focus on orientation. To recognize that teachers must put learners first. And it's a project that we've got to emphasize all the time. The math question you raised about paper 3 and geometry is a matter being discussed in the curriculum structure. Universities have raised it, schools have raised it, in a matter that is being engaged with. I mean, the points you're raising are the points that's being raised with us about incorporation of paper 3. And that's a matter under discussion with Uma Lucy and so forth. I'm sure by early next year we'll be able to report progress on where we stand there. Honourable Member Nda, you've spoken, you know, about a paradigm change, and you're right. That's exactly what we're trying to do here, about the OBE curriculum, and whether we're talking about quality or curriculum, and, you know, whether that shift is recognized, whether OBE has caused more problems than anything else. Look, Honourable Member, the OBE and any curriculum that we have is always directed at improving quality. On OBE, it's still in terms of key design elements, informing FET, higher education, and informing methodologies that apply in basic education. What we had to remove were those things that came from OBE that created problems in the curriculum. And that's why the minister removed. It was about how OBE, in its particular interpretation, defined the design features of the curriculum. We've taken that. But some of the methodologies, like constructivism, come from OBE. I said before in this committee, if you Google OBE, you will see that throughout the world, OBE is used as a generic term to distinguish between a traditional curriculum and an outcomes-focused curriculum. The planning approach that countries use that we're using is also outcomes-focused. Some people get confused when we say outcomes-focused planning. They think OBE is back again. But it's about simply saying we're focusing towards outcomes. So that is the good part of OBE. The bad part about the design and the confusion it's created, and where people felt we don't have to emphasize content anymore, that's been removed. So the CAP emphasizes that. And it's fundamentally, as honorable members indicated, about quality. Mother tongue is very much on the agenda. Literacy is very much on the agenda. If you look at annual national assessments, it's numeracy and literacy. The workbook is literacy in the foundation in mother tongue. Teacher development is focusing about mother tongue. First additional language is to ensure that literacy improves in the system. And we're also continuing with research to look at the impact of mother tongue. Our biggest challenge on mother tongue instruction and mother tongue generally is twofold. One is teacher capacity. It's a big challenge. And appropriateness of learning materials. The workbooks try to address the learning materials one. The workbooks also helps to address the teacher capacity issue. But ongoing training needs to happen there. Again, the Honourable Member is absolutely right. If we don't succeed on the mother tongue issue, a lot of these quality issues will continue, these problems. We've got to get it right. The age issue, Honourable Member, all very insightful issues you're raising. Just to say that the age of admission into grade 1 is turning 7. However, you can be admit your child turning 6, provided it's not harmful for the child. But the law says turning 7. Now, the Honourable Member is right. If you take that provision into account, turning 7, and our promotion regulations, it says you can repeat each phase once, and there are 4 phases. That means 7 plus age to complete all the grades plus 4 years to repeat. You could be reach an age where you're quite old. So you've got to reconcile that. You've got to reconcile the fact that in rural areas, learners are only coming to school at that age. So where it's in the interest of children and the environment to enforce that age grade norm, you've got to enforce it. But in a rural area where learners come to school turning 7, you can't enforce it, because remember what the Constitution also does. It makes schooling compulsory for children who are 7 to 15. Then we also have our educational objective. So you've got to provide that 7-year-old with an opportunity. You can't put that 7-year-old, I mean the 13-year-old, into grade 6 or 7. Right? You've got to make sure that child starts at the right age. So you've got to apply your age grade flexibly in a consistent manner with your provisions and the conditions in that area. But you're very right that we could end up with a situation where learners are much older. Then, Honorable Chair, in your summing up, you said that, you know, the plans are there, it's been there before, you acknowledge that there are certain things that are different, it's got to do with implementation. And I've said that I fully acknowledge that, fully appreciate that. And I am as conscious as anybody else would be, and perhaps more, about this fact, that the plan is not the end of our work. In fact, the finalization of the plan marks that watershed moment when the work really starts. So I'm definitely not going to be one who comes here and asks you to congratulate me because I have a plan. Or to ask the newspapers when they assess DGs to say, this DG is good because he put out a plan. They've done that before. If you're an national DG, you put out a plan, they give you full marks. Or NGO. We're not in a popularity contest at all. It's about implementation of this plan. So I'm not celebrating at all. We are going to dirty our hands. We are going to go in for the hard, tough grind. It's not about public relations. It's not about pleasing anybody who wants frivolous reasons to vindicate what you're doing. It's about ensuring that we succeed. It's about ensuring that we put ourselves out there to be held accountable. But that, honorable members, as a DBE, we now take responsibility for ensuring provinces are accountable. So I'm not going to be here defending. I'm going to be here, if there's a problem, I'm going to say there's a problem. And I'm going to say, this is what we're doing to address the problem. And to work with our entities, again, Honorable Chair, it's a challenge. You're right, that the entities entire have developed almost directions of their own. And we've got to ensure that we bring them into a framework of this action plan. And that's critical to do. It's an area that we're focusing on. I've tried to answer all the questions as best I can in the time. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DG. Honorable members, I don't have much time, but I know some of you might have a follow-up questions, of which I'll give really one minute per person, if ever there are follow-up questions that you need to do, following up on what the DG has just responded to us. If I can see by the indication of hands, if ever there are follow-ups, that you need to come up with. Honorable Smiley, let me note others. Honorable Makubela, and lastly, Honorable Moshwana. Can I take those hands in that order, please?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I just want to hear from the department. It's actually clarity. When are you going to start, you know, with this plan? In order to arrive at what you say, 2024. Remember, you have baseline figure, and then you say in your document by 2024, this will be that's the long-term vision then. Now, why I'm asking that is, have you considered, for instance, a baseline year, say 2012. In 2012, we will sort of get going. We'll make sure that the grade ones, when formal education starts in grade one, that we have everything in place, qualified teachers, resources to give those grade ones, which will be in grade 12 in 2024, right? If my calculations are correct, to make sure that they get a start or support to make sure that the achievement is well in place. So if you don't have a baseline or baseline year, what is that you are telling us? When will you start? And remember, I also see figures, and I want to ask you, what model have you applied so that you give me the 2024 figures? And secondly, have you considered the figures of the grade ones, say, for instance, in 2012? how many will they be? If you say by 2024 you will have 300,000 matrics entering a bachelor's degree, on what basis that you figure it? Thank you.
Honorable Smiles is referring to 2025.
Yeah.
So, okay. This is just to understand something. Do we have schools of skills under the Department of Education? Basic education, which would be FET related, but not necessarily higher education and training responsibility. The last one is just requesting you to familiarize some of us about these acronyms, SACMEC and the teams. Exactly, I know they are international, they may be Southern Africa as well as international, but what are the in terms of full names and all of that?
Yes,
thank you, Chairperson. We just want to check with the DG if their annual target has a direct link with the 2014 target, the overall target, 2014, if there is a direct link. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. DG, can I just add on that? Where exactly do you locate teacher development within the basic education? I'm asking this, DG, because we have just talked of SAIS that is going even to accreditate some of the trainings of the development that is going to be offered to teachers. But we know that there are unions who are doing these things, there are publishers, NGOs and whatever. Where exactly do we say you locate this for us to know exactly, to measure the progress on teacher development? Because if we leave it as it is, really more confusion is being posed to these educators rather than developing them the way it is happening. Secondly, DG, I was interested in your response around, I think it was the question that was raised by Honorable James, around the whole issue of infrastructure. And the way you have responded, it shows us that there is no uniformity as to what is happening in the provinces. But what is worse, DG, when you look at that, the burden or the whole it will go back to the department, the whole Department of Education, and with us there down, they will not consider to say the different provincial departments had their own way of doing things. At the end, we'll say these are the targets that were put, and the department has not delivered. We still have a bad look in infrastructure. So is there no way of standardizing it? Because if we say sometimes it will fall upon the Department of Public Works and some of other provinces and whatsoever. But at the end, when we do the analysis, we'll say the Department of Education has not delivered on infrastructure, and we do not have schools, we don't have everything that is needed within the Department of Education. So really, I don't take it if we are going to leave it as it is, as to say, to depend on the provinces as to what to do. But I think there must be a directive from your level as to see what needs to be done within all the provinces. That is why we even talk of ring fencing these amounts, so that to make sure that some things are being done there in the provinces. And lastly, DG, so that you go all out assured, where are we with the delivery of the workbooks? Are we going to be on time? Are we going to make sure that as the year begins next year, everybody does have these workbooks? Because I think that's the main concern that we have, as well towards the end of the year. But can you just give us that clarity so that we'll be assured as to what will be happening in general? Okay. Thank you, Dixie. Cannot.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members and Honorable Chair. In terms of the first question about the baseline, we've set a baseline here, which you'll see on the table for the indicators. You see each of them has got baseline and targets. Set the baseline and by when it's improving. What the Honourable Member is asking is the baseline here, at which point all provision will be supplied. Now remember, the plan focuses on outcomes. The provision is an input and it's a process indicator. So on all the process indicators, there are targets that by which time teacher education will be rolled out, by which time which targets will be reached on infrastructure, etc. But the important thing about a baseline is really the indicator and target baseline. and death sent there. So the point is, again, with an outcomes approach, is not so much measuring whether the inputs are met. Because you can meet inputs. There are schools in a country where you have a brand new school, brand new lab, brand new libraries, full complement of teachers, and the school is performing very badly. The point is about outcomes and performance, but at the same time, we also look at provision in the other indicators. So that's the important thing there. And then, have we projected the figures in terms of, have we looked at growth in numbers, etc.? We have. If you look at the technical document that sits behind this plan, it's a very detailed technical document which models growth in learner numbers, changes in budgets, etc., looks at what demographers have said about population growth and so forth, and it tries to factor all that into what's needed, classrooms, teachers, budgets, and so forth. So all that work has been done, and it's been done on an ongoing basis. It's a technical exercise that we bring a lot of experts into the issue. On the next set of questions around schools of skills, that the department have them, let me clarify the different options. We have technical schools, which provide the school curriculum up to FET level, but it's not FET colleges, right? It's FET school curriculum with a technical bias to it. So it's a technical school. Then we have schools of skill. And schools of skill are a bit different in that they depart from the formal curriculum. And they deal for learners who, for whatever reason, largely social, emotional reasons, have not succeeded in school. And they then get a four-year program with the intention of giving them some usable skill at the end of it all. They don't end up at FET level. In fact, they can come in at any, some of them have not passed, let's say, grade 3, and they may be 13 years old. And the idea then is they go to a school with skills, they get a four-year training program, and they end up with a skill at the end of it all. So those schools are fairly successful in some provinces, like Western Cape. Other provinces have them, but they're not very successful, and others, you know, it's not a big success at all. What we're trying to do with the schools of skills then is to say, how do we ensure that in rolling them out we have quality, but also we have a curriculum that caters for them. Remember, in any country, you've got to have a national curriculum. These schools, the national curriculum doesn't quite suit them. So how do you solve that issue is the question we're asking at the moment. Because currently, these schools, the question, the challenge they raise to us, which is a legitimate one, is when their learners finish, they can't give them an exit certificate because they don't have a curriculum for the caters for them. So that's the response to the School of Skills. In terms of TECMEC terms, pearls, and so forth, at the best of times, even I forget exactly what these acronyms mean. I'm going to give you the Government Gazette, which has got all the details in it here. It explains exactly. The one TECMEC is Southern African, the terms is mathematics and science, and pearls is language, reading language, etc. But I'm going to give you the Government Gazette. Honourable Member Mushwana had a question around annual target linked to 2014. Yes, the idea is that we've got those, but the point is, you know, it's not, in a five-year plan, your emphasis must be quite soft on annual targets. Because you spend a lot of time then focusing on the annual target and trying to analyze what you've done wrong and what you're doing right. And dissipating attention. The idea about the five-year target is to set the five-year target and to ensure that annually you make sufficient progress to achieve it. So, to that extent, we're setting annual targets for provinces and for the country as a whole. The challenge at the moment, which is what we're busy with, is to ensure provinces have those annual targets. So that's a big challenge. And that the targets go down to district level. Some provinces have them. Some provinces even have it down, like Gauteng got it down to school level. So that's the work that we've got to do. But you're absolutely right there. Honourable Chair, your last set of questions around teacher development. Let me just clarify. SAIT is only developing the system. SAIT does not provide. and we've made it very clear that it's not part of SAFE's mandate, and SAFE understands that now. The providers are, the department does a lot of provision, but it obviously must encourage others to do it as well. So NGOs do it, the unions do it, a whole lot of people, HEIs do it. The important thing, though, is not to stop them from doing it, but to ensure that everyone does it at the level of quality and within a consistent framework. And that's what we've developed. It's a teacher education framework which includes all the stakeholders to ensure that there's accredited programs and there's CPTD points attached to each of those programs and that it's monitored by the department. So clearly, that is the approach that we're using. Infrastructure, again, Honorable Chair, on the question of the variation on who provides, let me say that this is an issue which I remember in 2000, when I was still DDG responsible for infrastructure, we tried to engage on this matter. From then to now, it's not been resolved entirely. We just got a request recently that Public Works wants to meet us in a 10-by-10 arrangement to discuss how they want school infrastructure to be given to Public Works. Education meets with us and say they want school infrastructure to be given to education. So that's an issue over which I have no authority, by the way. I can't say who gets which function. That's a constitutional issue, and the executive needs to declare on that. So we've got this problem which we have been addressing over the years. To me, the big issue, really, is to do what we decide to do now, is to say, let's ensure we monitor, let's ensure we standardize in terms of norms and standards, and let's make sure that the delivery, outcomes, and quality is monitored, and that we hold people accountable for that. So whatever approach a problem is using, we can try to standardize that, and we must do that. But the bigger thing is to make sure that the outcome is quality managed and accountable, for which I do have authority. And that's what we're doing. And the minister's got authority in terms of NEPA. As a DG, I've got the authority in terms of monitoring implementation in provinces. So that's what we're doing, and that's critically part of the plan. In terms of the last question on the workbooks, the workbooks development is at a point where it's completed. We're just doing some final touches in terms of layout. The tender's been advertised and it's closed now. All provincial providers have submitted their tenders. We're now in the process of evaluating the tender. Because of the problems we had the last time around, we've included the National Treasury in every stage of the tender process. We now are recruiting auditors to audit every stage of the tender process. We believe that we're on track. We've got sufficient time for the printing and distribution of the workbook. It's improbable that we won't get an adequate service provider or providers to deliver. Because if you look at the capacity for printing in the country, there are many providers who can provide the printing. So we're sitting in a situation where we don't anticipate any problem. It's not like we're not going to get a provider to carry this magnitude of a job. We think the job is big, but we've taken out the complexity. The development done. It was done through an internal process. The only issue is to print and distribute. And that's what these people are good at. And there are a number of providers in the country who can do it, according to our assessment. So we've got the bids in. We'll evaluate. We'll do site inspections to minimize the risk, to ensure that the providers can deliver. And Honourable Chair, we're still confident in our, and working to the target of beginning of the year. And clearly we being held accountable to that target. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. I know it's as if we have just provoked other people to talk. By virtue, must be out members. Unless you feel that you are going to die, really, there is something that you need, a follow-up that you need to do. I'll just allow not more than three hands to do that so that you can conclude. Not more than three hands. Honorable James and Honorable Mushwana. Is there the other one? No, in that one. You're covered. Thank you for that. Honorable James?
Can you give us, DG, an exact date for the delivery of the workbook?
Mushwana? And ladies and gentlemen, you spoke of something that intrigued the whole issue of dyslexia.
You know, there are people who cannot sit in time. No matter what you
they
just cannot sit in time.
Yes.
But they need to live. I mean, they grow and they have families and they need to to have skills. I'm checking if you are able, as the department, to make a visit, do this country a favor and go to Denmark and check their... in Denmark, they have what they call for taxi school. They don't have to be able to do them. They, for example, take a lorry, take out its engine, and they put it back, and at the end of the day, you are making it and stuff. So I think we need that in South Africa, and I can't talk of that.
Yeah.
I'm checking. I see assisting. Thank you.
For the first time,
thank you. because I think that can come to the rescue of this country. But can we do it in South Africa?
Thank you. Yeah, I can confirm what the chair said. This time the heckling was in support. Honourable Member James, the date is the opening of school. It depends on factors. You know, with delivery of LTSM, we generally try to deliver before the school opens. We don't do it in many schools because the schools don't have secure facilities. We need to ensure that the teachers and principals are at school when we deliver. So it will depend on that. The other issue is that in schools where we know that the learner numbers have changed significantly, especially foundation phase, because we need to deliver exact numbers of, let's say, isiZulu books to the school because that's another tongue in that school. We need data for that. And if the data is not available, we only get it on the 10th day in SNAP survey. So we'll have to assess, you know, instead of delivering the wrong books to the school, we'll have to assess whether we've got that data to deliver. So we reckon if you look at these things generally with LTSM, by about the second or third week, we've got the books in. And by that time, schools are prepared. Others will have it before, but you see, we can't say to a distributor, please go and check on the school if it's ready, because they need to prepare and take a truck out. So they will then depend on which school can get the book. And if another school is ready and the other one isn't, they may decide to time it for the school that may be ready a bit later. But the deadline is that by the time we do the 10th survey and we get figures, hard figures, by about the third week, the books must be. Some will be delivered way before that.
Third week.
Yeah. Some will be delivered way before that. But definitely we will not deliver the books in an environment where the books will be at risk of rain or whatever. We can't do that. In some cases before LTSM, you deliver it to the corner shop because the school was closed. And then we found 6 months later the books are still in the corner shop. So we want to avoid those sorts of problems.
Okay. Thank you very much, DJ, for the presentation.
Sorry, I'm sorry. Because I just asked her a question. Sorry, Honorable Chair. Dyslexia is an example. You're absolutely right. You know, I think the mistake we made in this country, if we look at our skills development approach, is we sometimes insisted that for skills, people do a whole range of things, which sometimes actually deprive somebody of a livelihood. Somebody is dyslexic. You see, in our race to say we don't want to leave anybody behind, we've also gone on the other extreme. So you're right, and it relates to the question of the school of skills. It's about creating a curriculum that suits the needs of everyone. And there are dyslexic people who are very good at what they do, but sometimes can't get a paper because of our requirements. So it's an issue that we have to address.
Thank you,
DJ.
If we can get a copy of the district guideline, the district officer's guideline that you have just talked about, because you talked about it last year and we have been awaiting for it as a committee. So please, can we get a copy of that so that we can have a look at it, and maybe one day we'll just have to discuss that with you so that you give us a clear picture of what is happening. Otherwise, thank you very much, DG. We hope this plan is going to take our department to a certain level, and we are assured of our support as the portfolio committee, and really we hope there are changes that are going to be made that we are going to see throughout this plan that is there. Thank you very much, DG, and your team, and portfolio committee members, there are a number of announcements that we still need to do. If we can just release
the DG and the team, then we allow the secretary to make the if one or two announcements. They can even be made while they are still going getting out. There is no need for us to be there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just very quickly, the first is members are reminded of the video conferencing. The rest of the day is Thursday, August 1. So please make an effort to be there, and that was during your lunch. You will be an issue for me again. Every Thursday from office 1. It doesn't last for more than 20 to 30 minutes at most, the engagement. Members are available for the house in the afternoon. Secondly, the site visit, I've spoken, and I think we've touched base with all the members of the committee on the site visit for now Thursday, Friday. I think only Mr. Makubela may not have spoken to you at all. We leave Thursday afternoon. It'll be around 4-ish. More than likely, you miss half an hour of the plenary when we leave, and we should be back by Friday evening. And then just lastly, I've just received an invitation to the Ray Alexander Simmons Memorial Center. It's the launch on the 6th, it's on Saturday. I will send a copy to your email so you can have and to your pigeonhole. Please just let us know who's available to go. It's on Saturday the 6th. At 10:30 in Google Engine. Apparently the keynote speaker is the Deputy President, Mr. Moslanton. But I will send copies of this to your original there as well, just to keep me posted. Thanks, Chair. That's all I'm here to say.
Okay. It's an entirely separate matter, Chair, Acting Chair. I wanted to make a formal proposal to this committee to set aside an hour for a presentation we would like to make about teacher quality in the country and how to improve that. I've made a proposal, a motion in the House, for the House to discuss what the basic elements are in the constitutional rights South African learners have when we speak about access to basic education. And as you know, there are three elements to it. The first element has to do with having good teachers in place. The second element has to do with having well-run schools in place. It's about management system. And the third one is to have appropriate curriculum and infrastructure. And so we will see whether the House, in fact, decides to have that debate. We think that ought to be had, and we hope that all parties would agree to that, that it's an important debate for the House to have. Partly because the Constitutional Court is going to make a decision on that matter. And I think we need to define what the basic requirements are for good schooling for our children. And so what I'd like to do is offer our ideas about that to this committee for a discussion and debate as a way of leading into that House discussion in a way that's nonpartisan. We would like to see a nonpartisan discussion on this question, and for it not to filter through the normal factors of party political conflict over a fundamental question. So it's a request to this committee to give us an hour at some point in the committee proceedings over the next 3 to 4 months. Thank you.
Okay. Honourable Chairman, you thought that I think that is noted, the secretary and the gentleman seem to travel with that city, but it was noted.
It's not much just for your own discretion to look at whether it's possible at some point as a formal some sort of farewell or interaction with Ms. Choi. Just look at that and perhaps you will inform the committee members that there is that possibility.
Yeah, I think everybody is welcoming that.
Chair, and your honourable congratulations.
And what?
And your honourable congratulations, Chair.
Makubela, thank you very much for that. I'll make sure, Llewellyn, can you just work on that, lead up that, so that, yeah. I think that's a good idea, and I think it will be important to do that before the end of the year. So Llewellyn will leave that and look at that. Thank you very much. Nothing is left now, Honorable.
members. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Gracias.